And we're live, everybody. Welcome to Brain Food Live on Air. I think this episode 90... Oh, Adam Gordon is actually there. Would you believe it? Anyway, this is episode 94, I believe, bringing it to you every Friday. And we've got a super exciting show for you today. It is, in fact, one of the... I hope to make this like a regular thing because this guy is always like super... innovative, always a person that has... Oh, there he is. Adam, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm very good. How are you?
Goodness me, just not in time, Adam. Just not in time management. Never mind. How you been anyway? You been good?
Yeah, I've had an average of 5.5 hours sleep this week.
Oh, no, that's not very good. That's definitely not very good.
TGI Friday.
You know what? There's probably, did I not read somewhere in the Facebook group, there was like somebody coaching on how to have good night's sleep. And that is actually maybe something we should do a Brain Food Live on, because I think a lot of us are actually out of sync these days in terms of how we all feel about it. Anyway, listen, as we get on with the show, I need to say a few things in terms of housekeeping. Firstly, I need to apologize to everyone who was expecting this show last week on LinkedIn Live. For some reason, it did not fire off. So I do actually need to do a check today properly to make sure that that's actually on okay. So quick sound check. Can anybody, everyone on Crowdcast hear me okay? Just give me some sort of comment on the chat, on the chat stream. Let me know how I sound. And LinkedIn, in particular LinkedIn, super important. If you can hear me on LinkedIn, can you please say hello? Because I don't know whether this is going out or not. It says it is on my dashboard, but I've lost confidence on it because basically nothing happened last week. And it was like a lot of people were like complaining, say, "Oh, why aren't you doing the show anymore?" So I am, but you're gonna have to sign up to Crowdcast. And we're on Periscope. That's still going. That's the most reliable channel out. I don't know why. Shame is getting knocked out by Twitter in the end of March, which will mean we lose like a channel. So I need to get all those people either to watch the Crowdcast or do it on Facebook, or if LinkedIn is behaving itself, doing it there. All right, moving on very quickly. I think everyone can hear us. That seems to be okay. And a quick thank you to our sponsors this week. By the way, our sponsors are Daxtra. They've been awesome sponsoring us on the Brain Food Live, on the newsletter, and also on the Facebook group as well. Daxtra are, of course, one of the most venerable businesses dealing with this sort of age-old issue of data. How do you get a sort of better data? How do you clean it up? How do you make it more relevant? How do you convert moribund data into stuff that you can use? If that is your problem and something you need to work out, you've got 100,000 records of candidates sitting in your database, Daxtra may well be one of those tools you need to be using. Okay, moving on very quickly. We've got a great show, as I say. We're talking about LinkedIn Live. I'm going to bring Andy Foote to join us and give us his update. Plan is, by the way, we're going to try and run this on a quarterly. So Andy might be coming back every quarter for us to give us like an exclusive update. It's going to be awesome. But before we do that, let's get on with reviewing last week's newsletter real quick. Adam, did you read it in the time that you were conscious? Did you have time to read the newsletter last week? And if so, what was interesting?
I did. And I also know that you know I did, because I know that you're tracking me to see if I'm doing it or not. And if I haven't opened it, then I get withdrawn from Brain Food Live.
I can't actually do that. But yeah, it's probably not bad that you think that.
So yes. Right. The things that I enjoyed most, right. Absolutely, always. Alan, a friend of Brain Food Live, Alan Bailey.
Yes.
So she's written a superb 5-part series on recruitment marketing. And she's one of the best thinkers in this subject. She's not spent her career in recruitment marketing. She spent her career in other areas of marketing and technology. And it really shows, because her thinking is way beyond most people, even like 20-year veterans of recruitment marketing, who are still thinking about how do we optimize our career site and make, you know, get the best responses from job ads. Forget about that. You need to understand behavior. This is psychology. It's all about how do candidates make decisions about whether to read your content or not, how to generate goodwill, how to get people consistently thinking about your brand, not necessarily just for jobs, but in other ways. And go onto her LinkedIn profile and go and look at her blogs, because they really are terrific. And the one that you highlighted this week is one of my favorites.
Can I just say, Adam, I actually highlighted Alan's post through your you distributed it somewhere, and I picked it up off your thing, and I looked at it and I thought, you know what, that is great. And she's actually doing a series, which is something that is fantastic. So I think we're on part three. I don't know when part four is happening, but definitely follow Alan. That's like no question. You should go ahead and do that. That's the best way. You follow her on LinkedIn, it's probably the best way for you to keep up to date on this series that's happening. And of course, I'll be continuing to promote that when it comes out. Really is fantastic. I'm not sure whether she's still at Intel. Is Alan still there? Or she is? Yeah, okay. So
she's global head of recruitment marketing now. She was head of like TA transformation.
Yep.
But she's now specifically responsible for recruitment marketing.
Yep, fantastic. Anyway, must follow person in the industry, and great to see her spend the time to just share her thoughts in this series. So I've shared the link in the chat stream there, so make sure you go and check that out. Okay, what else, man?
Well, you know, it's obviously very, very sad that so many people have lost their jobs in the last 12 months. But I am really inspired every time I see companies who are really going out of their way to try and help the people that they're losing. Mm-hmm. And I've seen, I think Netflix did it. There's been, not Netflix, there was some, Airbnb, that was the famous one. They were, I think, one of the first big ones that did it.
I think they were one of the first, yep.
Yeah, Booking.com have just done it. And if I was a tech company, I'd be going right on there and I'd be making contact with all of those people, because anybody that's good enough to work for Booking.com is good enough to work for pretty much any company. So I'd be going on and making contact with those people and finding out about their careers and, you know, where might you be able to slot them into your organization?
Yeah, 100%. So this is the like one of the features that arrived from 2020 was the talent directory, which is essentially, you know, companies saying, hey, we've had to let 10% of our people go, but what we've done is put those people into a searchable database and then put it into a website so that people can check it out and, you know, help ease them into their next path. I think Airbnb were definitely the first ones to make this type of format famous. We pretty much saw everyone else do it who had, you know, that volume of attrition. I've just shared booking.com's obviously travel business have to restructure, have to do things differently. And they've got the staff they're letting go in that database. Go and check it out. As you say, there's some quality control you can probably be assured of there. And you know, you can understand why certain companies simply have to let people go, given the changed circumstances of the situation. So just share it in the chat stream. Definitely give it a blast. Okay, one more, man.
Well, do you remember about a year ago, Dominic Cummings wrote this is really, really good recruitment marketing. He wrote a blog, which was...
I do remember, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, if you're a weirdo, you like sitting in the dark and you're a satanic worshiper, then, you know, we want to talk to you because you think differently to some of us and we've got jobs for you in the government. That was basically what he said, wasn't it?
And, more or less.
Okay, well, our newfound friends in the American government have done something similar, but a bit less offensive and a bit more intelligent. So they've, in with the source code on their website, they've got... if you're reading this, then we possibly want to talk to you about jobs at the White House. And they've not just done it in that one place, by the way. There's about four that they've done. And it's a really clever technique because, you know, those people interested in hacking the White House are the sorts of people that, you know, could hack the White House's enemies for them. And, you know, so I really like this way of just leaving little, I think described it as an Easter egg.
That's what it is.
A little hidden surprise.
It's a hidden surprise. And whenever you find an Easter egg, it's always a delight because it means you're inside, you've basically seen an inside joke. Like sometimes if you watch a film and you've read the book before, there'll be an Easter egg in there for the people who've read the book that no one else would get, but you'd get it because you're like a deep fan of this thing, and it would make you feel better, make you feel special. And this is what the White House did. They basically snuck in, not even a job ad. It was just a call to action saying, hey, if you're reading this, it basically means you know a little bit more than average in terms of how to get beyond the graphical interface and start looking at the code of how the website has been put together. Anybody can do this on a browser, by the way. It's just inspect element, right-click, inspect element, console, there you go, it's there. However, you would not normally do that. A normal human being is not going to bother doing this type of stuff, but we're working in tech kind of things, so we've probably done it. But most people won't. But the people who do are the people who are working in tech. And so you're addressing directly that audience. And I love this idea of basically communicating to talent where that talent natively is. So you're not trying to draw them onto LinkedIn, because guess what? The only people natively on LinkedIn are us lot, recruiter types. Developers definitely are not there. If you're recruiting for certain types of people, have a think about where they want to spend their time. And that's where you should basically put your marketing dollars, or at least experiment. You know, there's almost that thing costs them no money to do whatsoever. And who knows the impact? If not, no impact, hey, good branding at least. But I'd be surprised if they didn't get more than a few candidates through that process just by doing that.
I mean, I think they'll get more candidates, not from people who have seen that on the website, but more so from people that have seen the news story about it.
Right. It created it's almost like the secondary effect of it, which, you know, again, it just makes the thing better, doesn't it? It just compounds the effect of it. So, yeah, fantastic. Okay, cool. Well, listen, before we bring on Andy, give me your verdict on LinkedIn. I ran a poll, by the way, on this Crowdcast. And it's quite interesting. I was surprised to see the results. But if you haven't seen this poll, then please do have a look at it. And it says here, three options. Use LinkedIn more this year compared to last. 59% of you said you would do that. Use LinkedIn at the same level as last year. 30% said you'd do that. Use LinkedIn less, only 10% said that. So it looks like, you know, people are doubling and tripling down on the thing. I'd be interested to know why that is. Has it got better? Are we running out of options? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's indispensable really for recruiters, isn't it? Unless you're in deep tech recruitment or scientific recruitment or something like that, or you're in blue collar, it's probably not that great in that area either. But if you're in what I think most of us are in, which is sort of white collar following a particular vertical, then it's like Google for us, really.
Yeah.
It's the first place for most things that we want to be able to do, and finding people, engaging with them, finding out, researching them. And that hasn't changed, and there's absolutely nothing that has rivaled it. There's lots of things come and gone. I remember getting told a few years ago, well, Intello is really just going to eat their lunch, and Intello has not eaten their lunch. So I think it's indispensable. I think they're getting better as an experience. This time, like 3 years ago, probably, it was just a shit experience being on LinkedIn. They'd removed a lot of the great functionality and hadn't replaced it with anything much. But I think it's pretty good. I think it's very, very frustrating that you don't know. Like, you will say, both for the newsletter and for your Facebook group for recruiting brain food, this is what good content is, and will get approved and remain there and supported. This is not good content and will not be allowed. If LinkedIn did that, it would really help content creators to spend more time there. Google does it, YouTube does it as well. They help content creators.
Oh, hang on, mate. I disagree with it, because basically I think they've got a dumb system to try and do that, which is based on engagement. And it means that actually, it actually promotes a lot of the stuff that probably wouldn't be valuable content, simply because it gets the engagement rate up. Do you remember the old Oleg scenario? And they ended up blasting Oleg, poor Oleg, off a little bit, basically blackballing him.
It's not consistent. They don't have any consistency around it. They don't reveal what gets to the top and what doesn't. And we have to have Andy come in and explain it to us every 3 months because it's difficult to keep up unless you're living in LinkedIn.
Like, this is the reason why Andy's got a thriving consultancy business, because they don't publish it and they don't tell you how it works. So we need like interpreters like Andy to help us. But yeah, fascinating stuff. And by the way, folks, there's absolutely no reason to be ashamed of logging into LinkedIn all the time. Recruiters often, you know, have a feeling, I recruit outside of LinkedIn, I don't need it. And it's like, all right, well, all well and good. But it does remain the single most significant source of candidate data that's relevant for recruiters in the white collar English language speaking world. So you're going to use it. I mean, it's not bad money. You know, that you, on a free profile, you can get lots of information compared to anything else. There's nothing close.
Can I just tell you something that you might find quite interesting? I periodically get kind of restrictions on LinkedIn, and I have to put people's email addresses in order to for the connection request to go out to them. Yeah.
Yep.
I've had that for about a year, something like that. Somebody in my team sent a message in for me to say, hey, look, this has been like this for about a year. Could we get the restriction lifted? And they actually came back and went, no, sir, you have a lifetime restriction.
Wow.
It shows how much of an industrial user I've been over the years.
That's you basically abused it to the extent that they've put a strike on you. And you know what? I spoke to a couple of people today that have been banned from LinkedIn. And it is very difficult because, you know, this is a critical part of your business. This person is an internal recruiter, for instance. Head of talent somewhere, he's been banned from his platform, and according to him, he's been banned for basically publicly criticizing another business for lack of ethics. That business complained and blasted him off, and now he can't find a way to get back on. And I'm thinking, we're in an awful situation. I mean, he obviously perhaps should have been smarter with his commentary. But I can imagine sometimes you might just say something on a platform like that, and then boom, it's like nuclear button pressed. But anyway, we might talk about this, Andy, to see what your thoughts are on it, whether there's any way you can claw this stuff back. But anyway, welcome to Andy Foote. Always a pleasure to bring this guy back. In fact, he's, I think, now the most persistent repeat guest. He's been back, what, 3 times? Normally, you'll find Andy, people just turn up and they never want to do it again. So it's like you're one of the people that keep going back, but both for your popularity and for your resilience of tolerating our terrible chat.
I've been loving it. If LinkedIn, I mean, why do you know, to your poll results, why do people keep coming back? Because they're a monopoly. Because they were a monopoly once they started, and they still are. And you know, the challenges come and go. That's it's the only game in town, certainly for recruiters. I mean, where else would you, you know, where would you go? Where would you spend the majority of your time? The point about, in the earlier discussion, the algorithm is relatively dumb because it does overly rely on engagement, right? So it's almost like you need to only connect with people and have this pre-agreed contract with them and say, listen, I'll connect with you, but you must comment on my stuff, right? That's how insane that is, right? Adam, listen, I'll let you into my first degree network, but dude, you need to react and comment on every fucking thing that I put out there. That's the only way that I accept you in.
Not safe for work language. I have to give a quick warning on that, because I believe LinkedIn doesn't like me swearing here. Because there's another thing. I wonder whether that's a thing, because I swear occasionally. Give us an update on that, Andy. You got an opinion on like profanity on things like LinkedIn Live and LinkedIn Post?
It is a fucking thing.
Thanks, man.
Sorry, no. All right, I'll stop doing that. Naughty. Yeah, I mean, there's a chap, Chris Williams. Do you know him? Have you heard of Chris Williams? Avant-garde marketer, right? Profanity is his thing. It's built into it. And he doesn't say the F word. He says ducking. But I think he was banned twice. And I'm not sure if he's been banned permanently. Because he basically continued to do it. And LinkedIn has recently released these LinkedIn professional community policies. And that's part of it. apparently, I mean, it's not, I don't think it says profanity per se, but it does say, look, you've got to be professional at all times.
Is it based on complaint, Andy? Or is it based on...
Yeah.
It is on complaint.
It is. So that's the problem, because, of course, that can be abused, right? If Chris has peed off anyone, if he goes after the podsters, right, then sure, this is easy for them to do. Only takes a few, right? A handful of them. But I'll give you an example of how silly it is and how dumb the reliance on algorithm is. I referred to something in a comment. I was talking about Kinder Chocolata eggs, of all things, and I was saying how, you know, they're banned in the US, right? People smuggle them in from Canada. And the reason they're banned is because at some point legislators decided, oh, those wee toys, a kid's going to choke. We can't have that. Lawsuits, right? That's ridiculous. Anyhow, you get a huge financial fine if you try and bring any of those suckers down from Canada. And I said the law's an ass. That was flagged. Ass was flagged. And I'm not going to complain about that. I've got better things to do, frankly. But that's how ridiculous it is. So if it's banning me, or it's not banning me, if it's flagging for that, you can imagine how Chris has fared.
This is a wider topic on the content moderation on these platforms that are predominantly driven by user-generated content. Like, we all kind of obviously don't want to see terrible things on the internet. I mean, I think that's definitely true. We don't want to see, you know, gore. We don't want to see those types of things that are terrible. And there has to be some way to police it. But to do it in such a way where you're like getting the population to make decisions as to what is good or bad, I think that's very different. Like, I've been admonished for saying the odd swear word. I've been admonished for, you know, saying things on LinkedIn and, you know, oh, this is not Facebook, can you please remove it? And I'm thinking, what? It's like, I get it, but it's not up to you, other user, to dictate to another person what you can and cannot do on there, if it's within the terms of service. But I would imagine that individual might have flagged the complaint, and therefore it's kind of created some sort of record against my name, which, you know, I wonder whether it has some damage in some
way. It does. It has far-reaching implications. I'll give you an example. That ridiculous the law's an ass comment, that may have cost me my LinkedIn Live application. I've had someone who knows someone, Frank, basically said, yeah, so I'll look into this for you, Andy. And that person came back to me and said, it seems that you broke the LinkedIn professional policy guidelines.
Right.
Really. She gave me the date, and I was able to narrow it down to that flag.
Wow.
That's the only thing. Wow, indeed. I mean, wow, stupid, but also completely unjust. And because I didn't complain about it, because I just thought, that's ridiculous. I don't have the time. That may have killed my most recent LinkedIn Live application. But not to go off on LinkedIn too much, but, you know, the whole state of applying for LinkedIn Live multiple times, which apparently is encouraged, because a lot of time you hear, oh yeah, I got it my fourth application. Oh, it took me six. That kind of encourages the multiple applications, which is a giant waste of time and resources, both on the applicant side, but also on LinkedIn side, right? If they're not giving adequate feedback, why the F would you do that? And it's like, I say it's the equivalent of trying to get a gun license and, you know, applying for it for the 16th time. And the gun owner, the gun shop owner says, you know what, Andy, because you've applied for it 16 times, we're just going to go ahead and give it to you. I mean, that's how dumb that process is.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. Makes no sense.
It's very difficult, and I'm personally very surprised that you haven't got a LinkedIn Live license, because
I'm not.
You'd be amazing. You know, this is great content there, but it is so arbitrary. It's literally, you know, it's hard to see why that often happens. And to a large degree, Andy, like I'm quite keen. I do LinkedIn sort of Bring for Life every Friday, for instance. Now I think that cadence is generally okay. And I hope it is, but sometimes I wonder whether if it's too high for some people, and you end up getting people complaining, and then that might sort of kick me off. So, which is why I thought last week might have been one of those incidents where perhaps people got tired of Brain Food Live and booted me out. So if you're watching this on LinkedIn Live, by the way, folks, don't report this and flag it in any way. Just give it a thumbs up. Say it's amazing. Thank you. Right. Final thing on.
Quick question. So I do think that LinkedIn, if you post something that is that goes kind of stellar, then the next few posts that you put on LinkedIn, it also gives lots of visibility to, because I posted something about a week ago, which got a lot of traction, and I know why it did, because it was really good professional content that people were interested in. But the following day, I said, it's my birthday, what shall I get for dinner tonight from Just Eat? And I got like 8,000 views and like 50 different comments, and you know, and that was not a proper post. I was literally just experimenting, and it got lots of visibility.
Yeah, I mean, there may be some kind of I don't know, like history effect where for a period of time they categorize you as someone who is capable of getting engagement. That might be it, but it also could be something along the lines of LinkedIn's recognition that it's not all about, you know, professional content these days. It's actually anything that will get engagement, frankly. Yeah, and that could be, you know, that could be your daughter being in a car crash, you surviving an apartment fire. It's become, you know, we talk about the Facebookization of LinkedIn. That's already here and has been here for a while. And so, I mean, I know a guy who specializes in that kind of, you know, sentimental, trying to get at your heartstrings, trying to get, you know, the empathy style content, and it works. I mean, he gets a ton of engagement.
Who is that person?
What's that?
Who is that? Does he mind us knowing? I'd love
not at all. He's a bud. Joel, Joel Lalge, Lalge.
Oh, he actually emailed me the other day to say, hey, do you want to come on my podcast or something of that type? And I said, yeah, definitely. But I didn't have, I asked him actually. But there is his LinkedIn. So if you want to get the kind of a style that is more empathetic, then Joel might be someone you want to pay attention to.
Yeah. So he's very good at that. And another chap that does that very well is Justin Welsh, Welsh. Justin Welsh is probably someone who Joel learned it from, frankly, because Joel is, you know, Justin's been doing it for a while. So it's blatant and it works, and there will always be an audience for that kind of that type of content. But if LinkedIn was smart about it, right? Because we've seen the algo, and to the point that you guys were talking about earlier, it misses, doesn't it? It misses the talented content creators. It misses the really good stuff. And I think the reason it misses that, and it tends to over-rely on this algorithm, is that they don't have the people in place, right? If they were serious about great LinkedIn content, then they would have a team of 1,000 folks, right? Let's call them editors for want of a better description, and they would be trawling. They would be trawling the content streams, and they would be looking for great stuff. And they don't. They have 50 or so editors, and they basically use the algorithm as a funnel, right? So the funnel does the initial testing. All right, is this good or is it crap? Based on the engagement, solely based on the engagement, which is again very much to do with, yeah, it's your audience. I mean, it's your first degree, it's your first degree network, it's your followers, it's your new followers, and then it's randoms, right? Now, if you've built a fairly randomized first degree network, then, and people who just haven't been present on LinkedIn, let's say they use LinkedIn as an insurance policy, and they have a limited presence, but they're never on the platform, right? Why on earth would the algorithm serve them anything, you know, LinkedIn related for me, as an example, right? So that's the problem there, but we can talk about it.
No, this is we're already into the topic via your complaint, Andy, so this is perfect. Because we can keep diving into this. I want to investigate this issue of being blocked on LinkedIn, your account has been killed because of repeated infractions or what have you. I know at least two friends of mine that have in this situation now, and they're desperate, man. I mean, because this is part of their business. They built it this way. yes, they were probably a bit shady, truth be told. You know, they probably were optimizing, they were probably automating in a certain way, or behaving in a way that, you know, LinkedIn might perceive as being a bad actor, but not like terrible. You know, it's just like automating a few things. And they've lost their LinkedIn account. And that is like an existential problem for how they do their work. And I'm thinking, whoa, is there a way to recover that? I mean, do you know, like, is there a pathway to you know, go back and say, sorry, sign, I'll never do it again and do that? Or are you just in the black hole and it's done?
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? That once you're suspended, you may not know if that suspension is a ban, number one. Number two, shit, I'm locked out. How can I even go to customer support when right. I'm locked out? Right? So it's like, what am I going to do now? I mean, this is, you know, I rely on LinkedIn. Well, yeah, there are, I'd say that, you know, ignorance is no defense in the law, right? So you can see in the user agreement, and we should all read the user agreement at least once or twice, but in the user agreement, it specifically bans, or it specifically says, look, this is wrong. And it's automation, right? Any kind of reliance on or use of third-party software to automate anything on LinkedIn, whether it's, the two most common ones are browsing profiles, because people have realized that, oh, well, look, if I can set this thing and it browses X amount of profiles for me every day, money, because we know that the mere effect of someone browsing means that there's a very good chance of a return browse, which then gets interest spiked, right, on a continual basis on your profile page. Yeah, I can see the attraction of that. I mean, it's lazy, but it's also more than lazy. It's against the law. It's against LinkedIn law. The other common one is where they set it up to, and you'll see this daily, probably. They will set up a piece of software which will send out a connection request.
Connection request, yeah.
Right. And again, it's, oh, this is great. I mean, the efficiency of this thing, I can set parameters for who I want to send this to. I can set the message. But you know what they can't do? They can't get away from the fact that it's essentially the mail merge problem, right? It's only going to grab the first name. That's why in my name, I've got spaces, right? So I know when someone's using a bot or automated software, because it's Dear A. Because it's not smart enough to realize that there's a gap between the A and the N. Every time, catches them every time. Other people use emojis, right, to achieve the same thing. So yeah, if you're doing any of those two things, you're breaking the law, and yeah, you're probably screwed. Now, on the probably front, there are two things you can do. You can appeal via Twitter, right? You can go at LinkedIn Help on Twitter, and you can plead your case there. You can give that a good try. I think that you do that, but the other thing you do is you try to do some outreach via some very well connected friends. To be honest, I think if they're not connected, if they don't have some kind of oomph, some kind of juice on LinkedIn, then you're probably not going to win, you know, any kind of, you're probably not going to get back on the platform. But it's worth a try. Both of those are worth a try. Can you plead ignorance? Yeah, I had no idea. I'm really, really sorry. I'll never ever do it again. And then they might look at what you've built so far, whether or not you're, you know, they'll make a decision on whether you're going to be a good LinkedIn citizen going forward. And they'll probably look at your network, right? How, I mean, if you've got thousands and you've been, you know, you've been good up until this point, you know, you just, it was a little fall. It was a minor error in their estimation. Then sure, there's a good chance, but I don't know.
Unlike in my case, you've been suspended every year for the last 10 years. That suggests a bit of a precedent of repeat offender behavior.
Repeat offender.
Respecting the rules. I tell you what, you know, back in the day, you know, exiling someone from the community was one of the harshest punishments you could do, because it would lock them out of the resources of their network. They'll be out on, not even on the street, they'll be out of the village possibly into the wilderness, more or less a death sentence back in those days. So it's the worst thing you could do to be exiled. And it just reminds me that a lot of people who are very much using LinkedIn, daily active user, this would only happen if you were a daily active user, I would guess, to be exiled in this way. But when you're just chopped off like this with no recourse to come back, wow, that's devastating. That is really devastating. Yeah.
It's hard.
So I guess the tip I've got to just give everyone is, look, there is cheap ways to try and get to a scale. You know, yes, everyone wants to hit massive amounts of network and send thousands of messages, but really it's not going to be worth your time because, like it or not, LinkedIn is the dominant player. There's no other place to go. You have to preserve your profile, make sure your integrity is 100%. Yes, it's an authoritarian, totalitarian, whatever you want to call it, type of experience, but this is what we've got. And it makes sense for you to play by the rules as cleanly as you can.
Yeah.
Anytime somebody sends me a connection request on LinkedIn and like they've been in the workplace for more than 6 months and they've got less than 100 connections, I'm looking at that going, this has been set up for some sort of automated spam.
Yeah.
This has been set up for a specific purpose. I actually disconnected with somebody very recently and I sent her a message to explain why. She'd sent me a connection request and went, yeah, okay, you're vaguely relevant. I accepted that connection request. And then within 5 days, I had three messages come through that were clearly an automated sequence. And so I just messaged and said, look, I'm going to, like, no offense, I'm going to disconnect. It's nothing personal, but you're not using this for something that's relevant to me. So I told her and just disconnected.
Yeah, I had the same. I had the exact same. I had a bot conversation. I kind of knew it might be, but I wanted to test it. And I said a few things in the message thread, and it was clear that that person either English was not their first language, or it was a bot. One or the other. And then I just disconnected. And then I shared it. I took a screenshot. I think I may have anonymized it. I don't know, but I stuck that on my my LinkedIn Action User Group Heroes group on Facebook.
Anonymize it. Okay, listen. It's really interesting diving into this bad acting behavior and trying to monitor, a connection, because I've got a slightly different problem in the sense I've now hit like this connection limit. Can't accept further connections. It is really difficult to disconnect someone on LinkedIn, actually. You've got to go individually per profile and remove. It's like a three-step process after having identified that person, then repeat. And you know what? I'm for sure I'm connected to at least like 3,000 like fake profiles or whatever, simply because back in the day I was accepting everybody and I'd love to blast them off. But there's no way you can do that without, taking enormous risk. And I know someone out there is going to say, yeah, why don't you just download your contacts and upload it to Yahoo and all this? No, that seems to me like ridiculously high risk. It would be great if LinkedIn found a way where you could say, like, is this account been inactive for the last 12 months? Then I'm presuming, that they're off the platform effectively. I'd happily delete them. But there's no way to find that out.
I'll put you in touch. I had this exact same conversation the other day on Clubhouse. And I'll put you in touch with a guy called Craig Langley, Hung. He's got a system for doing that. I'm not sure if he's bumped up against the 30K ceiling too, but he's pretty smart with pivot tables and spreadsheets. And what he's done is he's downloaded his data as a CSV. He's put it into the spreadsheet and he's able to determine or put various parameters in place where he can determine how recently someone's been active on the platform. And he's got another few things that he swears by that helps him to try and winnow down his first degree. So I'll put you in touch with him. But it's a common problem, right? I mean, the 30K ceiling seems arbitrary. I mean, why 30K? Why not 50K? And you're right. The people who are building at breakneck speed up to 30,000 connections, when they hit that, sometimes they don't even realize that there is a wall in place, right? They're not aware until it happens. But when you hit that, then it's kind of embarrassing, isn't it? It's, well, yeah, I can't connect with you because well, you know, because I've already got 30,000 people, and you know, who do I? I mean, I hesitate to use the word cull because that's such a horrible word, right? Who do I disconnect with, and on what basis? That's always the dilemma. And yes, you're right. LinkedIn, probably on purpose, right, doesn't make it easy. It's not like you can go in there and you can say, all right, who's been active within the last 6 months, 12 months, right? 18 months, or who's never actually engaged on my stuff, right? Yep. Who's never ever sent me a message, right? When was the last time they're actually, when did they log in on LinkedIn? That would be useful. None of that. So it's probably done on purpose, right? Because LinkedIn would rather we just connect with as many people as possible and always spend as much time as, you know, as possible on the LinkedIn platform. Whenever I come up against something that is clunky, difficult to do on LinkedIn, I always think this is probably by design. You know, this might be dark UX.
This is where you and I have, like, you know, significant differences in terms of our character, Andy. I'm much more generous. I reckon they just, you know, they probably built it and they didn't think about it to ever have this use case, and then it's just a mess. Like, another part of the problem is that I tend to remove people off the mobile phone. So I use the mobile app to do it. It's faster. But the numbers don't match with what I see on desktop. So oftentimes I get it down to, like, you know, I've removed 100 people off the mobile phone. I look back on the desktop thing, I'm still at 30K. I'm thinking, I can't add anybody. Have I removed those people? Yes, no, I have no clue. Anyway.
Well, one thing I would just say is that it might be in one environment you're seeing number of followers versus number of actual connections, or
no?
The other thing I wanted to say was LinkedIn is behind other social networks in some ways on this, for sure, and it's a shame there's not. It's going to become more and more as long as, you know, more and more people are going to have this challenge, so they should make it easier. But there are like plugins which can help you do this on other social networks. So Audience, for example, certainly allows you to go and make sense of your Twitter followers and who you're following, and then you can do mass, you know, remove mass unfollows and things like that. Is there nothing? Does nothing exist for LinkedIn yet?
There is, but you can't. If you use it, you get killed. I mean, basically,
it's the API.
Pedro, it's LinkedIn Helper, right? I mean, LinkedIn Helper, I think, may actually enable you to remove network connections at scale, but I'm not going to use that because I don't want to get blasted off the platform. It's like, I want to obey the terms of service here. So I want to be a good citizen, basically.
It's LinkedIn's API that, you know, makes it such a walled garden in terms of third-party apps. I mean, back in the day, I think 2012 or so, there was a great app, I forget the name of it, but it essentially showed me who followed me on LinkedIn, and who followed me on Facebook, and who followed me on Twitter. And I could go through that, and I could decide whether or not I wanted to follow them back. It was just so slick, and it was simple. It just focused entirely on those relationships, but nothing like that since, because of the API and the, we don't want to play well with others.
You know, well, I mean, they've got to protect that, haven't they? Their company value goes down. The value of their brand goes down in every way if they make it easier to take content out of it and things like that. And, you know, they've had all these court cases where they've had loads of products just shut down. They've actually bought some and then shut them down. They've bought some in order to understand them and then shut them down.
Yeah. So the one outlier is something called Shield. I don't know if you guys know about Shield Analytics. I think it's shieldapp.ai. I've been a user of that for about a year and a half. And essentially what it does, it does this because we essentially give our permission for it to look at our data and to suck up our data and to keep an eye on our data. By data, I mean everything. I mean audience to your profile page. So visitors, it captures that. Followers captures that. But probably most excitedly, it actually goes quite a way back. It doesn't go all the way back, but it takes a snapshot of all of your content data and it aggregates it. And it gives you some tools, not great tools, but some tools to see how content is done, gives you an engagement ratio. And you can see exactly how you're doing post per post. You can see trends. It's pretty good. It's not that expensive either.
Why are you confident about using this? I mean, isn't this one of the things that LinkedIn is going to say, Andy, no?
No, I'm not, because they've I've been using it for a year and a half, and they're very well aware of it. Lots of you, I mean, I wouldn't put a number on how many Shield users there are, but I'm estimating it's going to be, you know, 1,000+.
Right.
Andreas Johnson is the guy that runs it. And he's, I think he's essentially said that, yeah, they can't do anything because of the way that we do it.
Yep.
So it's not breaking any, let's say, current law. But yeah, it's a very useful service.
Excellent. Listen, there's loads to talk about. We've kind of segued off. I want to deal with one more thing that Colin McNicholas has mentioned really interestingly, and he's absolutely correct, of course. What do you do with people who have actually died? I mean, you know, there's every network has this issue. You set up a profile. Obviously, we're all on the same inevitable biological journey. We're all going to be there at some point. But this problem will just grow and grow. Like, how do we remove those profiles? Is there a way, like, there's no way to notify anybody, is there? I mean, it's like it's going to stay there literally as a fake profile, not as a fake profile, but as an inactive profile forever, I guess. The person who's going to come in and deactivate it.
Yeah. So I think it relies on reporting. So, you know, someone who's on LinkedIn and their loved one or someone they know has definitely shuffled off the mortal foil. They can do it that way. But I'm not sure if there is a quicker way to do that, you know, to land on the profile and report that person as deceased. There ought to be. But I think, you know, the way that it's certainly being done is via customer support, where you can open a ticket and say, hey.
There's got to be a massive business opportunity for a company that will be the organization to collect the information on this basis and then update all the social networks.
Yeah.
And just say,
because if you're misallocated, though, imagine if there's another Adam Watson Gordon in Glasgow who got deceased, and then all of a sudden my LinkedIn profile says that I'm no longer available ever.
Right.
R.I.P.
I know. They need a death certificate, right, to do it properly.
Right, yeah. I think you need to be certified. But once you're there, I can imagine I'd pay some money for that. It'd be part of your will or something, wouldn't it? To say, look, I mean, what you don't want is to have people waste their time. And the network gets worse. That's the problem. Because give this like 20 years, there's going to be like an increasing volume of profiles that are never going to respond. Because guess what? The owner of that profile is no longer here to respond. Therefore, the value of the product is going to go down. So it's actually going to be quite important for all social networks to do this.
Stephen Rothberg says he's done it. He's reported it to both LinkedIn and Facebook in the past. And they've asked some questions. And once he's verified the information, they've deactivated the profiles. I quite like it when I see a profile where it does say like in memoriam or something like that. Yeah. You know, I think it's nice for them to have a forever kind of footprint.
Yeah,
agreed.
I agree. Yeah. You should just grayed out or something, and you should just have a nice thing to say, hey, listen, a date of, you know, where you were born and died. I think that's fine.
Reminds me of Kirsty Bonner. Her passing, I'm not sure if that's a memoriam page or if her, I think her profile was simply deleted, but I'll need to check.
See, I don't know this story, and sorry, guys, I might be totally behind.
Kirsty Bonner? Kirsty Bonner is up there with... It's still there.
Sadly, Mesh has got their dates of...
Can you share that, Adam? I'd like to see an example of what that looks like.
She's up there with Oleg, you know, same country, but same sort of... influence, very, very popular in terms of her career-related advice, you know, short and succinct. But not to go off on a tangent, but she spoke about suicide in an early post, and a lot of people said, oh, how dare you? This is disgusting. You're just doing this for the attention, blah, blah, blah. So you had all these trolls come at her. And then sure enough, you know, this was a lady who had made multiple attempts to take her own life and eventually succeeded.
Oh no.
Her profile's been, I mean, her profile's written in past tense now. Kirsty Bonner was a, I do quite like that. I think that one way you might do it is you just leave your social media login details in your will and, you know, ask somebody, you know, that's close to you, give them some instructions on what you'd like to happen in the event of your death.
If you, Yeah, if you're that well organized.
Yeah, that's a service that you need to pay for. I think that's where you kind of sign the rights to that, to this business who are going to take care of it. You can't imagine going to someone you trust that might have trauma as a result of you passing on to then log into your Facebook or whatever. Yeah, you know, absolutely. I don't think that makes sense. But anyway, it's an interesting segue. Listen, let's try and bring this a little bit back on track. But it has been fascinating, hasn't it? This type of free-ranging discussion on LinkedIn. I hope you've enjoyed it so far. But let's focus the remaining bit of time we have on the updates on the platform that you've been aware of over the last, let's say, 3 months or so. So into the late last year and into the beginning of this. And then we're going to take a little peek into the future, Andy, to get your to what you anticipate to happen. So things that have already happened.
I'd be happy to do that, Hung. So I wrote a post last year where I documented all of the, I think, so-called biggies in terms of what we've seen LinkedIn give us in terms of enhancements or features.
Have you got it? Fire up. You have.
What's that?
Have you got
it? Oh, yeah. Let me see if I can grab it.
Because LinkedIn is such a huge platform, it obviously has multiple kind of releases across multiple products. It's impossible to keep an eye on everything.
Yes.
And stuff happens without you even knowing it's happened. And before you know it, it's like, oh.
They don't document it, that's for sure. So folks like me do. And so in January, we saw an extended headline. So before it was a hack where you could only get, 220 characters or so if you edited on your cell phone on the app. Now LinkedIn have enabled that. People can do that on desktop too, which unfortunately means that people are now thinking, oh, I'm just going to stuff as much garbage in here as I can. It just leads to a wholesale move away from slogan type headlines. I think those are the most impactful.
Okay, so let me just repeat this, yes. Andy. You're saying that the LinkedIn headline, which is just after your name, like a really important bit of screen real estate, that's gone from what number of characters to what?
So it used to be 120, so now it's around 220.
Right, so a lot more real estate to see.
A lot more. Yeah, you'll see like text heavy headlines, and as I said, people not really using that space well. It's more like a laundry list, right? Of here's what I do instead of here's what I can do for you, which I think the best slogan headlines do for you. In February, we saw a much enhanced, a bigger featured section. So this is the where you have this like carousel thing where you can go through all of the things that you want your profile browsers to pay attention to. You shove your best stuff in there, the stuff that's most impressive and most relevant to you and what you do. And the important thing about that is if you've got a great post, you can actually pin that in the featured section, which is cool.
If you had a status update, you can pin it into the feature section. I didn't know that.
Put it in there, it becomes pinned. Yeah, so that's big. February, again, we had unlimited group messages. So before they used to limit you to 15 per month in all of your groups. But now they got rid of that restriction in February. It means you can basically group message to your heart's extent. So if you're in a group with someone, you can message them. You don't have to be connected with them. By dint of being in the same group, you can go ahead and message.
So,
go ahead.
This is an attempt to restore groups in some ways, isn't it? They're kind of thinking, they've totally dropped the ball. I mean, they were well ahead of everyone with groups, right? And then they threw the ball away and Slack picked it up. And it's like, why did you ever throw the ball?
Right.
Idiot.
Yes. Well, interestingly enough, Dan Roth, the editor-in-chief of LinkedIn, he, in a Clubhouse room a few weeks ago, he was asked about a few things, including groups, unsurprisingly. And he said, well, we've got a big team working on groups, and we have made investments this year, and you'll begin to see those investments playing out this year. So watch this space. And I can't say any more than that.
Message to everyone on that. Yes. Basically means you've got to pay attention to groups again. If you're thinking along the lines of marketing, or you're thinking along the lines of growing a community of some type, it may be time to spend a little bit more attention there, because they've been moribund for a long time. And maybe it's time to revive some of that stuff.
Everyone who's been saying, well, groups are dead, no, they're not. I mean, if you look at look at what's actually happening, not what everyone is saying, but look at what's actually happening from LinkedIn side. Last year, they did this big rah-rah marketing campaign, which came more off a spin rather than anything else. But they did several meetings. They did this big campaign about all these enhancements that we're going to do, and it was just a damp squib. The fact that they're still doing it right this year, and they did that last year, means that we're gonna actually improve the group's product. So how that is improved, of course, we won't know until we see it. But I'm still bull on LinkedIn. I'm bullish, and I've invested a heck of a lot of time and energy on building up groups. I've got 8 groups, over 40,000 people in aggregate. I'm desperate to see some kind of improvement in the utility, but also in the community side of things.
Yep, great.
Andy, I don't know if you remember, but the first time we met was back in 2012. I was just looking there. We've been connected since May 2012. We were both running pretty large groups, and we were exchanging some, you know, That's views right. on how to do things and that kind of thing. Yeah. And we kind of stumbled into each other because we were both running quite large groups for people in Scotland. And although you're not in Scotland, you're from Scotland. And yep. we were both running, and we were trying to work out, is there anything we could do together here to join forces? And much as we didn't, it was good to start sharing some ideas and things back then.
That's right. Yeah, that's how we first met.
Memory lane.
Indeed. And Adam's group was great. You still got it, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I didn't do anything with it. I was trialing the concept of a really properly well-run social media community, and I had 10 different people in large businesses in Scotland, like the head of Knight Frank in Scotland, the head of Deloitte in Scotland, the head of, you know, and they were all, every 2 weeks, each one of these people would see the conversation about finance, about marketing, about, you know, whatever their specialism was. Yeah. And it was really highly structured. And for about 2 years, all I did was just prove that it worked. And then we were running groups for lots of other organizations as a marketing service. And we were using mine as the kind of benchmark for this is how to do it.
Yeah, they ought to be great again. Just because...
Hey, groups, great again.
They ought to be great again because...
Can I get the hat? We need the cap and, you know, get the merch out. Let's do it.
But you know, regardless of how crappy the group experience is currently, you've probably seen this too, Adam, but all of my groups are still in growth mode, right? No one's leaving. They're still ticking up. So that certainly is indicative of interest, if nothing else. So, yeah, they need to get their finger out.
I've got one called Strategic Sales with 14,000 members. I haven't been into it since it was like 7,000 members. But I just keep approving people to join it, and there are things happening in there. I'm just not controlling anything. I'm just like a guy standing at the door for no reason.
It's basically like an overgrown garden now. It's out of control. It needs pruning. And LinkedIn gives us the agricultural like tools to prune this back and get it into control again. And if it is, Absolutely. Hey, listen, maybe it comes back in a positive way, because we've seen – I think that we've seen how groups can actually really work, whether it's a Slack group or it's a Facebook group or whatever group, other social networks have actually taken on the baton. They've really provided an example of how to be effective online. So, okay, great. Let's move on, Andy. What else is interesting update-wise that you spotted from...
Yeah, so I've already dropped a link to that article about things that I've documented that are big, you know, polls, stories, open to work, the support reaction, name pronunciation, the out of office away message, newsletters. But the other thing I did, and I'll drop a link to this too, is I basically looked into my crystal ball, and I came up with 10 things that I think could happen, some that I'm... again, bullish on, would be hashtags 2.0.
Hang on, Andy. I wonder whether you might be happy to share your screen with us on this one, because it might be cool for people to actually see those 10 things that you've got up as we talk through.
Let me just make it pretty here.
Yeah, we don't have any time for design work, mate.
All right. How do I share it?
I think you just hover on yourself, and there should be a.
Oh, here we go.
Hang on, he's just setting share up a screen.
Share screen.
Yeah, go ahead.
Open system preferences. My Mac's saying, "I've got to allow something here." Hold on.
I think Andy's got a new Mac. That's why.
He's got Zoom blocked or something. He's got the.
All right. What is it letting me do? Vivaldi. There we go. Oh, it's going to ask me to quit.
Don't worry.
It's going to ask me to quit, and then I'll lose everything. So let me just go through it quickly. So I'm saying hashtags 2.0. They're relatively dumb. I mean, dumb because all you get now is followers, right? Just a number of followers. So we don't know who those followers are. We don't know how often they click, how frequently a hashtag is clicked, right? When, et cetera, et cetera. That's a marketer's dream. Anyone who's interested in what's happening to LinkedIn, if they attach a hashtag, especially their own custom hashtag, that would be marvelous. So I really hope LinkedIn do more than the current, what I'm calling 1.0. Endorsements. You will have noticed this, I'm sure, but whenever you endorse someone, now they're sniffing. They're really, really trying to figure out. So what is the strength of this relationship between you and the endorsee? Right. Mm-hmm. How good are they actually at this, you know, this skill that you want to, that you're about to endorse them on? So because they've been doing that and because they've been doing it for easily 18 months or so, I firmly believe that we're going to see a refresh, perhaps even a rebrand of the skills and endorsement section. They may call it something else to get away from the stink of endorsements because of the way it was rolled out.
Yeah, basically anybody can endorse anything and you do it as a favor and it ends up being ridiculous.
Exactly.
And to demonstrate how ridiculous it is, I need to tell you both and everyone here that I am the most endorsed person on LinkedIn for LinkedIn endorsements. So what you need to do is endorse me, but if you're going to do it, only endorse me for endorsements, okay? Because basically, I'm the top guider. Anyway, that was a joke, and it kind of flew out of control. What else is going on?
How much time we got?
We've got plenty.
All right. So, I think also to my point about what Dan Roth said about groups, that's going to happen. There's going to be some kind of groups revival either this year or next. I'm hoping this year, and fingers crossed, it's going to be good both for, you know, group members, but also group owners. It's got to do both, frankly. And the reason they haven't succeeded in doing anything meaningful so far is because they haven't done anything in conjunction with the actual people that run groups. In theory, I think embedded podcasts. I don't know if you've been watching the whole Clubhouse thing, or whether or not you've dipped a toe in or played around in that space. Absolutely phenomenal. I've been on there for 3+ weeks now, and it's a great connection strengthener. There are some people that have only been on the periphery in terms of my knowledge of them on LinkedIn, and now have come right into focus, and I understand what they do, what their talents are, and it's just remarkable. So the more time I spend on Clubhouse, the more followers I get there, especially if you're on the stage and you're doing your thing. Mm-hmm. But I also find there's a ton of folks on LinkedIn follow me over to LinkedIn and say, hey, can we connect? Saw you on Clubhouse, blah, blah, blah. So that's an amazing thing. It's very much reminiscent to me of blab.im back in 2000, I think it was 2014 or so. It's that instantaneous, right? No BS. I know you. I know your character. I know your. I can hear your voice, right? But it's so powerful and immediate. So people are loving that.
Okay, so before you go on, I believe LinkedIn will probably buy Clubhouse at some point and then completely screw it up. But in the 2 years or so that doesn't happen, it's worth checking out. iPhone only. In fact, Pedro is here. Pedro and I are going to do a Clubhouse with Hugo, I think. Next week, it will be my first time to host the room. So everyone here is like more than welcome to join that if you have Clubhouse. Pedro, do you want to share the damn link down there? It might be useful for people to check out on chat stream. Okay, go ahead, Andy.
Yes, and interestingly, you know, I don't see any other potential suitors on Clubhouse. Maybe it's just because I'm like in my lane, but I am seeing a lot of LinkedIn folks. I mean, they're doing these Clubhouse rooms on a regular basis, so that is certainly of interest. And it kind of makes sense. They're either going to buy or try to buy Clubhouse at some point, Microsoft, or they're going to try and replicate. And I hope that they do it within groups, because that would be a sensible place to do it, right? It kills two birds with one stone.
Sorry, so, Andy, why is it you think LinkedIn would be the most likely to buy Clubhouse? Is it that's because the people that are on Clubhouse that you've been interacting with are people that you see from LinkedIn? Or what's the...
Well,
because
no.
I understand it's not really a business focused network, is it? Clubhouse.
No, it's a complete mishmash. And let me rephrase that. I'm seeing LinkedIn folks on Clubhouse on a regular basis. So senior LinkedIn folks are there.
I'm not seeing
other potential suitors. But the fact is, Clubhouse, they just got another round of financing. They're worth $1 billion. Apparently, they must have easily 1.5, 2 million members already. They've been going since, I think, last April. Initially, just a Silicon Valley sensation. Now they're getting bigger. The number one German app in the App Store recently was Clubhouse. Mm. So, yeah, fascinating. But I personally think that it's actually a better play for Google. And the reason I say that is because it's Google search. If you apply that to audio and what they can do there with their amazing algorithms, that would be a very interesting play for me, because it's search and it's data and it's you know, can you imagine marketers would pay top money to understand more about potential customers, et cetera. I think that's the better play. I think the obvious play would probably be Microsoft and LinkedIn and groups. Mm. Embedded podcasts. So the problem, any podcaster knows this, on LinkedIn, because you can't embed the full episode, people are going to bounce to listen to the podcast and potentially never come back. And so that's an engagement problem. You can never get enough reach whenever you're trying to advertise a podcast. And I don't understand the lack of love for podcasting on LinkedIn. It doesn't make any sense to me. And I hope that they fix that. Embedding might be one way, or linking to the full, you know, to the full podcast might be another way to do it. But they have their own podcast. They have Hello Monday. Why can't we do the same thing? Global live translation. We already see this, right? This option to translate with just a click of a button, the comment, rather the post, and I think the comment. Yeah, I think we can do both. I think what we'll see now is live translation. So in other words, it'll automatically translate in our chosen language something foreign. That's just a step away. Imagine what that's going to do for engagement. You won't know, right? If it's in whatever Chinese or Portuguese, you'll never know, or you'll know, but you'll know that it's been translated for you. There's no need for us to click anything. LinkedIn should be providing that on the fly. All right,
that
so live.
Be amazing in terms of like properly internationalizing LinkedIn, because it is. Yeah. Very Anglo, obviously very Anglo. And, you know, it's only in Europe because Europeans are brilliant at speaking English. But only then you look at the education levels and suddenly, you know, there's no reason why a working class person in Spain would ever get in LinkedIn because it's
absolutely
so in English.
And to that point, you know, someone asked me the other day, so, Andy, where are the trades on LinkedIn? Why don't we have, you know, the blue collar folks on LinkedIn? Great question. Is it because a lack of, maybe they just think it's not for them, which is, you know, it's a branding issue. But well, there's no reason why they shouldn't.
Yeah, and I can actually kind of answer that. The reason for that is because different people prioritize their careers more than others, and so the sorts of people that would make a job move for $1 an hour extra or something like that. Are not necessarily the sort of people that are going to be participating in discussions about skills for your profession and things like that. So it kind of makes a bit of sense that it's really more kind of white collar type professionals that are in there.
It's in the DNA as well. We shouldn't forget that LinkedIn was set up as a professional networking site. And you know, Reid Hoffman, that was the vision. So I think that DNA, you're not going to get rid of that very, very soon. LinkedIn have actually struggled, I think, to expand beyond that. And we know they want to. They want to get into early career, for instance. Huge problem, because it's all based on professional skills, right? Absolutely. So what are they doing there? So there's gaps in the market that are being filled by other players, but again, not dominant. So you do wonder whether LinkedIn might eventually swallow some of those up and get there. Anyway,
yeah, I mean, there's no reason for blue collar folks to be putting out videos on here are the latest trends in my industry, or you know, this is how you do home inspection in 2021. There's no reason for that not to be on LinkedIn. That would be useful, but
they're not normally selling anything or trying to achieve influence beyond the scope of their day job, though.
Businesses would.
So they would. I mean, I tell you something. There's another. Yeah. By the way, we can't get fixated on this topic. Working class people in trades are definitely doing this type of content. They're doing it on TikTok, man.
Yeah.
Because consuming it. You see workmen doing stuff. You see fishmongers. You see all kinds of practical people. The mobile device, I think, is critical. In other words, a blue-collar person is not going to be sitting in front of a keyboard and tapping into it. They're going to be out. The definition of the work is that they're out there physically doing stuff. Therefore, it has to be mobile first. LinkedIn is definitely not mobile first. Okay, got to move on.
Final point. The other main takeaway was something that Dan Roth dropped about expect to see, or we're working on better analytics on your profile page. So I'm thinking, you know, what we have on the company page, I think they're going to try and do something like that, possibly, you know, better or different, but for our profile visitors and perhaps even our content. So that potentially could be quite exciting. And I call that premium stats, because they may just decide to give it to premium folks. I don't know. And that's the end of that, my friends.
Cool, cool. And Dan Roth, by the way, is a LinkedIn person in charge of product or something like that, right?
He's the editor in chief. So everything content is his game.
Cool. Right. I'm going to jump straight into these questions, because we've got six of them and I want to fire through them in less than like 10 minutes. Okay. Let's do the first one. Does reporting a fake profile ever go anywhere? It's from Tom Bolt. If no one is LinkedIn, I think it does happen. Steve Rothberg has mentioned that he reported someone who had in fact passed away, and there was action taken there. So I think it does work, but probably not consistently. Okay, next question. This again from Tom. Does LinkedIn know when I access profiles through products like Seekout, HireTool, Loxo, etc.? Answer that, Andy, if you can.
No idea.
No idea. Okay, we don't know, Tom. Okay, another one from Steve Rothberg. As to you, Adam, when you're disconnecting from a real person like that, do you report them to LinkedIn for spamming? So in other words, you had a poor experience, you disconnected, do you then report on?
This was just really straightforward. It was a sales rep for some sort of automated bot chat technology. And like, she was sending me Calendly links and stuff like that. And I just eventually went, look, you don't want to actually be connected to me here. You just want to sell something. So no offense, I'm going to disconnect. If somebody has done something
Did you report that person for spamming, though?
No.
You didn't?
No. I mean, that's like, that would be kind of vindictive. If the person's done something to harm me, then I might. But if they're just doing what they think is right and it's just a bit dumb, then no.
I think that's right. And by the way, Steve, I'm alongside. I rarely sort of hammer anybody for spam. I think, you know, people are entitled to sell to me. They're entitled to send me a message. I think that's totally fine. It's when it's persistent and they don't stop, that's when you've got to do something about it. Okay.
It's like karma to me. You know, I mean, I I've got a company that sells things. We've got certain things that we do to enable getting in front of people. And, you know, would I want to be reported? I maybe have been every year. That's why I'm restricted. Yeah. But, you know, I wouldn't want to be reported for that. So I think, you know, it's something about karma.
Want to respect that, because it can damage someone else's job. This is probably a young person doing a sales job. Why would you damage that person unless they were being, you know, egregious? Okay, this is a question I think, Andy, you'd be good on. This is from Jane. Jane Moores. Jane, I hope you're feeling better, by the way. Great to see you here in the show. I heard LinkedIn no longer boosts videos more than text posts. What is your view on this? And what is your view on the best type of post that gets boosted? So LinkedIn, does it do anything? Does it boost video? Yes or no, Andy?
I don't think it does. I don't play in the video space much, but I don't think it does is the short answer. I've heard that you really need to push or put out video that engages for more than the first 3 seconds to get you any kind of reach. But what I'm hearing from a lot of my video producing friends is that, yeah, it reaches all the way down. I don't know what's going on. Is it prioritizing text over, video content? It's all speculation at this point, but certainly a lot of video producers are not happy.
Yep, fantastic. And video is expensive to produce, right? So you will feel it if it's not getting the results. I mean, for me, I'm generally I'm a typer in terms of my content. And yeah, it's depressing if you get like poor views or whatever, but it's like absorbable because it costs you like 10 minutes to do rather than huge production cost to produce a cool video. Okay, final question from Phil. Should you share more in groups than in the main feed in order to add value to them? So I think he's saying, should you like just put stuff into the groups to try and build them up? Or is that like taking it away from the main feed? Because obviously you've got limited time in the day.
Thoughts? So if I had a choice right now on where to put my content, I would be putting it out there as a regular post or whatever. I wouldn't be putting anything in groups right now. I say keep your powder dry until we see those group improvements, because they could be amazing. They could be significant improvements which would make posting there certainly viable, if not beneficial.
Cool. Very good. Okay, final question is actually not related to this, but I can handle it. Fran, yes, Clubhouse is only on iPhone for now. It will be coming out on Android, I'm pretty sure. Okay, that's about it.
Quick question for Andy. One very, really final one. If you paste content into a post and then press share, does LinkedIn know that you've pasted that, which means you've probably got it from somewhere else? Because anytime I type it in and I type the whole message, I get better views and visibility and interactions than if I have posted something on Facebook and then I paste it into the LinkedIn and then share it, for example. Or do you know?
Yes, that's a great question. I don't know, but I can't imagine that they would be able to detect whether or not something is pasted or typed. I just don't think it's that advanced, or frankly, would they care? Because a post, whether it's text, I mean, I copy and paste stuff all the time into, I mean, it's better to do sometimes because LinkedIn can be glitchy and you don't want to lose it. So you have, you have the backup, you have it copied. So I don't think that matters, Adam.
Okay. Final question from me, actually, Andy, because I've seen you change your behavior on posting LinkedIn. I really like it. And this is like you're adding images, but text-based images, so images that have text in it, and you're putting the message in the image share along with the copy. What's the rationale behind that? Why is this a good idea?
Right. So I want the benefit of the compelling image, and I've been using a certain purple or a bright sort of colorful thing. But my thinking is that people may slow down because you've got two feeds, haven't you? You've got the notification feed and you've got the home feed. I want to try and get people to slow down in that very, very busy river of content. And I hope they slow down because they might recognize the color if I stick to a certain brand. And then they'll be able to see the text on the behind, the text on the first slide is in essence. And I want to make that big enough to be legible on a small screen, but also, in a busy desktop river of home feed content.
If you want to check out examples of what that is, follow Andy. I thought you should do that anyway, but follow him on LinkedIn now, and you'll see what the style is. I'm going to adopt it, I've got to be honest, because I think that's really effective, and it means that you've given the consumer an at-the-glance kind of way to consume your main point without having to, click through to see all those things. And you should always try and minimize the click-throughs because you want to give value straight away. Okay,
dwell time. Dwell time, baby.
Dwell time. That's something we haven't
dwell
talked
time,
about.
Baby.
Dwell time, very quickly, Andy, do you want to quickly describe what that is?
Yeah. So instead of relying on folks, users to click on something, and what they've done is, it's pretty clever. They've decided to monitor what we do with our scrolling behavior. So not just the mouse, but the way that we scroll. And their dwell time is attempting to detect whether we slow down in the home feed. If we slow down, all right, they're going to measure that. If we click, they're going to measure that. How long we spend on that particular content, that piece of content, they're measuring that. And then when we bounce, they're measuring that. So something I do in line with that thinking is, knowing that they measure absolutely everything, not just our clicks, but our scrolling behavior, I also do my favorite kind of post is a document post, what I call a article in a post wrapper. And by that, I mean, I have a slide attached to my post. So I give enough information for folks to read onto the attached document, and then they click on the document. Well, that document can be article sized, right? So it can be 16 plus, right, plus pages in that document. So that's the way that I want people to dwell. And often I say at the end, in the very final page of that document, I say, thank you for dwelling. And people understand, oh, okay, yeah, get it.
Nice elite egg and inside joke. Okay, that's about it, folks. I've just shared the article on dwell time in the chat stream. Go ahead and check it out. It's in the larder because it went into the newsletter. It's a really important post if you want more engagement on your LinkedIn sort of updates. Okay, that's about it. Thank you very much, Andy Foote. It's been a pleasure having you on the show as ever. Speaking with you and keeping you on screen. I think, you know, we should do like a Joe Rogan style 3-hour marathon or something, and we still have enough to talk about. So great to have you on. Andy, we are back next week with our final installment of From a Developer's Point of View. So if you care about developers, you're hiring tech people, we're going to be talking about onboarding. We've got the CTO of Blendl coming to join us, the engineering manager of Ecosia coming to join us. It's going to be amazing. So make sure you're there next week. Other than that, keep an eye out for the newsletter that's coming out on Sunday. It will also be very good. I'm going to write it after this show. A final shout out, of course, to our sponsors, Daxtra. They are the business that you need to use if you've got a load of data and you want to clean it up. There's the link. Okay, that's about it. We'll be back and with next week. See you later, folks.
Bye, guys.
That's the end of the show. Adam, we should really... Anyway, you and I need to catch up because it's been a while anyway, but we won't do that whilst we're live. So I'll end the broadcast at this point. We'll have a chit chat at some other stage. But anyway, good evening, everybody. Time to go.